It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Today I spoke to Green Party co-leader James Shaw about some of the risks that fishing can pose to seabirds, the births, deaths, marriages and relationships registration bill, and the Green Party's four-step plan to address housing.
Let's start by talking about seabirds. Green has noted that seabird deaths at the hand of fishing equipment was higher over the past 2 years than any of the 4 years previous. Is that right?
Yes, that's our understanding. And, you know, we've obviously been calling for controls on, you know, fishing equipment and cameras on boats and so on for some time now. And so, you know, we think that it's important that we actually progress on this, because it is one of those areas, I think, of government policy that should be able to make more progress than it's been able to make over the last few years.
There have been around 1,020 confirmed seabird deaths by fishing equipment, but MP Eugenie Sage said the true number is likely to be higher. Why is that?
Well, there are, I mean, the data is very poor, and that's because, you know, we don't have effective monitoring. That there are official estimates that suggest that somewhere between 3,300 and 14,400 seabirds die from bycatch each year. And that's, you know, because they're attracted towards fishing vessels by bait and the kind of discards that come off the boats. So that's kind of gives you some indication of just how massive that variance is, right, in the data that comes back. And so it's one of the reasons why we think better monitoring of the boats themselves is really important.
Why is it that the fishing equipment we use poses such a significant risk to seabirds?
Well, you know, bottom trawling and, you know, these kind of large nets, you know, where you've got vast amounts of fish, obviously attract birds and they get caught in the nets. It's actually worth noting that long lines, which are a more sustainable way of fishing, actually are also one of the biggest threats to seabirds, because when they go over the backs of the boats, they float a bit before sinking, and so seabirds kind of get caught on the baited hooks, you know, as they're going off the back of the boat. And, you know, it's just one of those kind of thorny issues that you've got with fishing, whether it's recreational or commercial, is that birds are attracted to the fish. And so there's no perfect method, but there are certainly things that we could do that would help to reduce the birds that get caught up.
So what are some of those alternatives that could make this safer?
Well, one of the things that we've been calling for some time is a ban on bottom trawling, which we understand would reduce the number of seabirds caught as bycatch. And, you know, there were about 50,000 New Zealanders who signed a petition last year asking for bottom trawling to stop, and those kinds of measures would help. It is really important, obviously, that we get much better data than we've got at the moment, and having cameras on the boats is one of the ways of helping to build better data.
Now let's move on to the Births, Deaths, Marriages and Relationships Registration Bill. What is it that this bill aims to achieve?
Well, so first of all, the bill's been around for a wee while, but it's one of those things that got caught up in the last government. What it does, and certainly the changes that the Select Committee have been looking at, allow individual people to change the sex on their birth certificate based on their self-identification. And so this has been an issue in the rainbow community for some time, that the sex that people identify as isn't the one that they're officially recorded as, and so it gives them the option of changing that.
What are the current barriers that trans people face when they're trying to correct their birth certificates?
Well, they're not allowed to. I mean, that's the basic problem, is that at the moment, you know, that, and this is just a historical kind of norm, you know, the sex that's recorded at birth is the one that, you know, kind of essentially you get identified as for the rest of your life, regardless of your own, you know, personal identity. And so this is a measure that other countries have adopted, and it's something that we've been wanting for some time, and it just stalled in the last government, and we're really keen to get it over the line. So we're really pleased that this bill is coming to the House this year.
Right, so that's quite a significant change. But what does that mean for people whose birth certificates originate in different countries, possibly countries where this isn't a law? What can we do to help them?
Well, there is a concern that you've got for, you know, migrants, refugees, asylum seekers, and so on. And what we need to do is to make sure that they are accounted for in this legislation. So essentially for them to be able, as they naturalise and become New Zealand citizens and or permanent residents first, that they actually have that option here as well. At the moment, that's not contained in the bill, that option.
Is Green Party pushing for that to be added in?
Yes, we are. And I mean, we'll just have to see how that goes.
Lastly, let's talk about this four-point plan that the Green Party has outlined to address the housing crisis. Could you just go over what each step of the plan is for me?
Sure. So the first thing is there's currently something called the Brightline test, which means that if you buy a property and then within 5 years you sell it again, you have to pay a tax on the increase in the value since you bought it, and that's a way of trying to clamp down on speculative investing. What we think that we should do is to actually just remove the five-year cap, and so that would mean that on any investment property, so anything other than your first home, your family home, that you would pay a tax on the increase in the value since the time that you bought it, no matter how long ago you bought it. And that's important because what we're noticing is happening with the existing Brightline test is that, you know, people buy a house and then all they're doing is holding on to it for 5 years and one day. And of course, as we've seen, it can accumulate a hang of a lot of value in those 5 years. And then if you sell it the day after the five-year line is drawn, then you don't pay any tax on that. So it does actually mean that, you know, that actually if you just need to get rid of that kind of time barrier. So the second thing that we want to do is to start to regulate investors' access to mortgages. So that's things like getting rid of interest-only mortgages where you only pay the interest and you don't pay any of the principal, putting restrictions on debt-to-income ratios, particularly for investment properties. So that's really quite significant. That's used in a lot of countries, including the UK, where I lived for quite a long time, and it says that there's a ratio between essentially what you earn and how much you're allowed to borrow. So you might only be allowed to borrow, I don't know, five times what you earn, for example, and that really helps to kind of dampen the investment market. Third is requiring cash deposits for mortgages on investment properties. So at the moment you can say, well, I've got one property, I'll just leverage against that for the mortgage on another investment property, and that's how people end up accumulating properties because they don't actually have to put any cash up. And so what we're saying is, no, just like any first home buyer, your second home or your third home should have, you know, you should actually have to put down a cash deposit for that. We're also looking at saying, look, you know, we think that the government needs to stimulate the economy less by using the kind of massive increases in property, you know, because at the moment, basically what the government's doing is saying, well, we're going to let the Reserve Bank bump up property prices with monetary policy, and then people who own properties will feel wealthy because they'll see the value of their property increase on paper, and then they'll go out and spend more. And that's how you kind of keep the economy going during the recession. We think that's fundamentally unsustainable, and that actually a better way to do it would be for the government to actually stimulate the economy, particularly by supporting people on low or no incomes, because we know that those people will go out and spend that money on, you know, goods and services. And that's a much better way of actually stimulating the economy than this ridiculous house price bubble. And then finally, a massive urban development and home building program, which we think should build. We think that the economy has probably got capacity to build about 5,000 houses a year, public houses a year. and that's, you know, not nearly enough. But if that's all that can get built, then, you know, let's make sure that we're building every house that we possibly can until supply meets demand.
Right, yeah, so I do want to ask about this last point about building more houses to address demand. My understanding is that there are already quite a number of empty homes across the country, so wouldn't building more be potentially wasteful if we're not addressing the homes that have already been built and are unoccupied?
Yeah, look, there's a very good argument for that. We think that there's something on the order of about 30 to 40,000 empty homes. Some of those will be, you know, they might be apartments, for example, that people who live out of town might use very briefly every now and then, and so on. But many of them are probably simply investment properties where the landlord has decided to leave it empty because they know that they can make more on the capital gain than they can from rent. And that is something that the Greens have talked about in the past, is how do we incentivize moving those, if people basically aren't using those houses to house people, then how do we incentivize them? The issue that we've got at the moment with that is that whilst those empty homes are, you know, an estimate based on data that we've pulled, for example, from, knowing whether or not an electricity bill has been paid over a particular period of time. We don't have a sort of a direct, you know, there are kind of privacy issues, right, to be able to say, well, you know, how do we actually find out and confirm that a place is empty? And if it is, what are the kind of things that you can do within privacy laws to get in touch with the landlord to say, hey, you need to do something about this property that we think is lying empty? So that's quite a thorny issue, and that's, I think, why the government hasn't moved particularly quickly on it. But you're right, it is an issue that needs addressing.
Right, so with this four-point plan, do you expect that there's a realistic chance of it being introduced? And if so, how soon would you like to see this sort of thing come into effect?
Well, I would like to see it come into effect yesterday. Well, or better still, 10 years ago, before we saw this, you know, real runaway increase in house prices. I don't think that there's anything in here that is unreasonable. And when you consider just the scale of the crisis that we have in the housing market at the moment, the Greens' view is that your solution should be at the scale of the challenge, right? And when you've got a crisis of the proportions on your hands, you need to adopt a correspondingly radical solution. It's otherwise, you're basically committing not to solve the problem.
Thanks to James Shaw for talking to me again this week. We'll be right back after this break.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.